Good morning, everybody. Now's our time to get our Bibles out or our apps. If you're going to use the Bibles in the boxes there, you're going to look for page 455. And we are going to read Esther chapter 5, verses 1 through 14. And the plot thickens. On the third day, Esther put on her royal robes and stood in the inner court of the king's palace, in front of the king's quarters, while the king was sitting on his royal throne inside the throne room opposite the entrance to the palace. And when the king saw Queen Esther standing in the court, she won favor in his sight, and he held out to Esther the golden scepter that was in his hand. Then Esther approached and touched the tip of the scepter. And the king said to her, "What is it, Queen Esther? What is your request? It shall be given you, even to the half of my kingdom." And Esther said, "If it please the king, let the king and Haman come today to a feast that I have prepared for the king." Then the king said, "Bring Haman quickly, so that we may do as Esther has asked." So the king and Haman came to the feast that Esther had prepared. And as they were drinking wine after the feast, the king said to Esther, "What is your wish? It shall be granted you. And what is your request? Even to the half of my kingdom, it shall be fulfilled." Then Esther answered, "My wish and my request is, if I have found favor in the sight of the king, and if it please the king to grant me my wish and fulfill my request, let the king and Haman come to the feast that I will prepare for them, and tomorrow I will do as the king has said." And Haman went out that day joyful and glad of heart. But when Haman saw Mordecai in the king's gate, that he neither rose nor trembled before him, he was filled with wrath against Mordecai. Nevertheless, Haman restrained himself and went home. And Haman recounted to them the splendor of his riches. Verse 11, I am so sorry. The number of his sons, all the promotions with which the king had honored him, and how he had advanced above the officials and the servants of the king. Then Haman said, "Even Queen Esther let no one but me come with the king to the feast she prepared. And tomorrow also I am invited to her together with the king. Yet all this is worth nothing to me so long as I see Mordecai the Jew sitting at the king's gate." Then his wife Zeresh and all his friends said to him, "Let a gallows 50 cubits high be made, and in the morning tell the king to have Mordecai hanged upon it. Then go joyfully with the king to the feast." This idea pleased Haman, and he had the gallows made.
Morning, everybody. How are we doing? I sure hope you're enjoying this walk through the book of Esther and our look at this amazing story and talking about God's providence. Before we jump in this morning, though, I want to get us excited and involved in something else. As a church, if you're new to Genesis, this is kind of who we are. If you've been around for a while, you know this. We are here as an outpost of God's kingdom in Eureka to serve and love this city and to preach Christ and make him known in Eureka and beyond, right? Can I get an amen? You with us on that? Okay. So this weekend is one of the benchmark moments where we have the opportunity to do that. This weekend is Eureka Days, okay? Eureka Days is this big celebration in Eureka, big carnival, lots of music, other stuff, kids, stuff for kids, all this sort of stuff. And from the beginning, like our first year, we got involved and told the city of Eureka, we want to be a part of this, but what we want to do is we want to be a part by serving our city. And starting with our first year, and every year until last year where COVID kept us from having the event, we have been doing the same thing. The first thing is that on Saturday, the Eureka Days Parade takes place. It goes right down Central Avenue, and tons of people show up, hang out at the parade. My expectation is that's going to be really big this year, that people want to get out and see and kind of re-engage these sorts of things. And so we have a float in the parade, but our float is a little different from most of the floats. Our float is the last float in the parade. And what we do is that we need you, all of you, to engage this, okay? We show up with gloves on, with trash bags ready, with some scrapers. And what we do is we follow. Our float is actually a flatbed trailer with a bunch of garbage cans on it. What we do is we serve the Eureka Parks Department and the city workers by cleaning up the parade route. So we are the last float in the whole parade. And the first year we did this, they actually circled their workers in behind us and started down thinking they were going to follow us and clean up what we didn't clean up. When we got to the bottom, they said we didn't have anything to do. And I said that was the point, right? And so there has become this beautiful relationship that now we have. Our service there says a lot to the city. We have this great relationship with the city parks department and the city of Eureka because of our service over the years. Some of that has even shown up this week as we've started talking to them about what our long-term plan and what we announced last Sunday of about a potential site for a building. And already we just have this good relationship with our city because we have served this. That's not the reason we do it, but it is an outcome. The reason we do it is because we want to represent Christ to our city. So first thing is that Saturday, we need you to show up at 10:30 with some gloves on, ready to go. Bring your kids, bring the whole family. Let's get like our whole church walking down the street serving our city together, right? We'll gather at 10:30. The sad part is this year the city has told us that they're changing the location of the gathering, but they have not told us where we're supposed to go yet. And so we used to gather down by the railroad tracks. I think it's going to be different this year, but I'm not 100% sure. So be looking for your emails and stuff from our online community, Koinonia, to announce that later this week to tell you exactly where to gather. But we need you there by 10:30, okay? So that's the first thing. And then on Sunday, we are part of the Kids Corner. On Sunday afternoon, as part of Eureka Days, the city hosts a Kids Corner that is designed to be a place where kids from Eureka and all over will come to down to Lion and Legions Park. I think it's on the Lions Park side. And we'll have this big like area where kids are making crafts and playing games and just all kinds of stuff. And our Genesis Kids ministry, led by Missy and Leslie, have organized, like, we have a table there, okay? And our table will provide an opportunity for us to literally hang out with some kids, have conversations with families, and leave an impression in our city. Right now, we have two people signed up. We've got to fix that this morning, okay? So the sign up for that, you don't need to sign up for Saturday, just show up. But the sign up for that is actually on the kids' table, or you can rip off your bulletin. There is a green tear-off from your bulletin where you can register for everything we do with that tear-off. You could drop that in a basket on either end. They're looking for people to serve in our time slots. And so if you register by pulling off the bulletin thing, tell them, can you serve? I think it's from 1 to 2, 2 to 3, 3 to 4, 4 to 5, I think are the times. Anybody in here, did I get that right? All right, it's in a bulletin. There we go. So you can look in the green folder. And so if you want to just tear that off, and what we have is at both tables, we have baskets where you can drop that green tear-off card. Every week that basket is there. So anything you can register for that you see in a bulletin, just put your name, fill out the thing, drop it in a basket. That will get you registered. But this week, we need to know if you can work. So like right now, go ahead and grab it. Grab your bulletin and figure out what time you and your family can come work. If you have kids, come help. Your kids can have fun in the kids area for that time while you work. And if you're like, my kids will run away and we'll never find them again, then you and your spouse, if you know, are there with you, trade off, or you know, make a deal with another family that you'll come for this hour, then you'll take their kids for that hour, all that kind of stuff. But we need you. Both events. It is a major serve. For those of you who don't know, 5 years ago, our service doing this, the city of Eureka at Eureka Days named Genesis Church the Citizen of the Year, because of our relationship with the city and our service here. So it is just one of the ways we get to display our love for Jesus and our love for our neighbor by serving the city, all right? So that's exciting. I can't wait to do that with you. And we will see you on Saturday morning, all right? Cool? Amen? There we go. All right, good. So these two ducks and a frog were hanging out at this farm pond, and they become kind of friends, right? There's a segue for you, right? They're hanging out at this farm pond, and they just become fast friends. The ducks talk to the frog. The frog talked to the ducks. They all thought they were something special. But over time, it kind of had to dry. The farm pond started drying up to the point where there was almost nothing, no water left. And they said, we need to go somewhere else. And the frog looked at the ducks and says, that is easy for you to say. You could fly out of here. I'm stuck here. And they started saying, you know, we need to come up with a solution to that. And the frog said, you know, I am really smart and I am brilliant and I can always come up with a solution. And I've got one for this. What we're going to do is we're going to find a good big stick. And so they started looking around. They found this big stick. And the frog said, all right, duck, you put it in your mouth. And duck two, you put it in your mouth. And you two hold the stick. And you can fly away. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to reach up and I'm going to grab hold of the stick. And I will grab and hold on until you fly to another place where the pond still has water. And the ducks were like, you are so smart. You are so brilliant. That is a great idea. And so the frog grabbed hold of the stick and the ducks took off and they started flying. Well, Farmer Jones is, you know, standing there and looks up and there goes two ducks with a stick carrying a frog. And the farmer went, what in the world is going on here? That is brilliant. I wonder who came up with that idea. And right then the frog said, I did. Man, how often do we just want like that moment of honor and being known and to make sure that people know that we are important and special? It's kind of wired deep into our being. There was a study that was reported this week that actually the study, what was found out when the Washington Post posted the original article was that Facebook had actually been sitting on this study for a long time. The study found that Instagram is having a worse impact on our adolescence than we knew it was. So here's just a little addendum to this. Moms and dads, be careful about the social media access you're giving to your kids. It's actually wrecking them. What the study found was that Instagram, Facebook, and other social media have similar, but Instagram, because it's photo-based, they're now estimating that 1 in 3 teenagers in our country are being deeply affected negatively in the way they see themselves and things like their self-esteem, leading to things like eating disorders and thoughts or carrying out suicide. 1 in 3 adolescents in our culture are being deeply negatively affected by, very specifically, Instagram. They look at their pictures and you know, kids are start posting their own pictures out and the picture is saying, look at me, I'm important. And then when nobody likes it, nobody follows them, nobody connects, that impacts them. They see the images, and one of the things about Instagram is that Instagram is always the fake version of you, you know? And so a lot of times people, you know, friends and other people are putting stuff out, and then everybody wants to be this social media phenom. Like everybody, like those of us who have gray hair in my age, we're like, I don't get this. Everybody under the age of 25 is hoping that they can post something eventually on YouTube, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook that will make them known and make them a social media icon. They can be like the Kardashians, right? But it's not happening. But then they begin to see their real life through the lens of the fake lives of everybody else who has posted and they have followed, and the outcome is deeply tragic. In the article, they said this, or actually the New York Times reposting right in their own article said this, the pressure to look perfect, the tendency to share only the most positive and polished parts of a person's life and its addictive nature can send teens spiraling towards eating disorders, an unhealthy sense of their own bodies, and depression, according to the article in the Washington Post, which cites an internal Instagram report from March 2020. In other words, Instagram, Facebook owns Instagram, knew this, and has tried to hide this report since 2020, and Washington Post has finally posted it, because they knew that once this got out, it's a warning sign. But why is that so tragic and so real? And the answer is because there's something that deep within us wants to be known, recognized, to have our life count, and the world is telling you that the path to happiness is through the exaltation of your pride. That is just a core message. You make much of you, and you will have a full and meaningful life. Meanwhile, you pick up the Bible, and the Bible starts giving us quotes that warn us about the perils of pride and draws us to the beauty of humility. And our text today, our story here that we're looking at here in Esther, what we have is a moment in the story where we have a massive contrast of two characters. And in those two characters are Haman and Esther. One of them, it becomes a beautiful picture of what humility looks like. The other one becomes a massive image of what pride looks like. And I think this chapter is just fitting right in with so many texts. We'll talk about one here in a minute that talk about the fact that the posture of our heart was made for something weightier than ourselves, but we have filled it with ourselves. And therefore, we are in our sin nature, we are bent in on self, and as a result, we are proud. Now, I want you to think about this. Think about this. When you think of the word pride, like people who are proud, who comes to mind? Help me out. Throw it out. Who comes to mind? I'm sorry, I hear it. Athletes, all right? Politicians, man. You can't hardly be a politician without standing up and acting like you were the solution to all the world's problems, right? What else? All right, I heard me. We can think about actors and politicians. You know, I started watching this documentary with Muhammad Ali, telling his life story. And he actually is a very young fighter named Cassius Clay, had started winning. And man, he had the fastest hands and the fastest feet of any fighter that they'd ever seen. And his manager, Angelo Dundee, just began to realize this guy's going to be great. But he was trying to figure out, how do I do this? And how do I, you know, make myself known? And he already, you know, just had this ability to think on his feet and talk really fast. But he saw this wrestler who literally went by the name of Gorgeous George. He had these long, flowing blonde hair. And everywhere he went, like, he had this massive, he was the most popular wrestler of his day. He was hated by more people than liked him, but everybody went to see him wrestle. And he was standing up and goes, "I am too beautiful to lose. I am too awesome to lose. You know you love me." And Muhammad Ali listened to that and said, everywhere he went, he got a crowd. That works. And his whole persona, Ali's persona, came from the moment where he said, the way to draw a crowd and make much of yourself was to start doing that. And so if you're familiar with him as an athlete, that was kind of, I'm the greatest of all time. I'm too beautiful to lose. I mean, he started throwing that language out all the time. And people either loved him or hated him, but it did draw the attention of the world. And our world is wired this way, that we want to, like, we're drawn to people who stand up and through social media or on because they are great in their field, not only show greatness, but they love to talk themselves and make much of themselves. We live in this world where this is exalted. And in the midst of this, we are told that in the scriptures that is a very dangerous posture. In fact, it's very much like when my experience when we went on a whitewater rafting trip. Right? We went whitewater rafting with a group of teenagers several years ago. Back, we were in Georgia and on this river that was actually the river used for the 2006 Olympics for the rafting. You know, and so it moved pretty quick. And they told us, like, everybody was like, "What happens if I fall out of the boat?" And you know, in our minds, the answer is, well, you die. That's the answer, right? So don't fall out. So I was holding on to dear life. No way I was falling out. But they said, here's what you tend to do. You tend to preserve yourself and figure out, how can I get back in the boat? And what people tend to do is, when the current, you have this massive current that is pushing, and in the midst of that massive current that is pushing, you fall out of the boat. What you tend to do is you tend to try to turn towards the current, fight the current, so you can save yourself. And what they say is, that is the fastest way to drown. What you actually should do is turn around and let go and completely release yourself to the river, kick your feet up so they're in front of you, let the life jacket do its work, and let the river take you where it wants to take you, with an eye on what's going on downstream. And this is what the Bible's trying to get at when it talks about humility and pride. It is saying pride is this way of doing life where I am trying to save myself, making much of me, but towards God, the current of His glory and His grace, what we find is that He actually opposes that while those who give up and trust in him and don't make much of them but trust in the Lord and give themselves over to him, they will find grace and mercy and peace. There is a, just by chance, I started reading a book about 3 weeks ago, a couple weeks ago. Actually, I say reading, I'm listening on audio. This book, and the reason I'm throwing that out is because I'm going to tell you how to get it here in just a minute. It's a little book by Andrew Murray called Humility, The Journey Toward Holiness. And the reason I got it is because if you're not familiar with this, there's a website out there called Christian Audio, christianaudio.com. They have an app and all this sort of stuff. And they do a free book every month. So if you're not familiar with this, I would challenge you, especially if you have a commute and you do stuff, find this website. But this is their free book of the month for the rest of this week. They change here in October. So for the rest of this week, you got a week to find this. This book by Andrew Murray, who lived, you know, a generation ago, is the author. And it's just Humility, the Beauty of Holiness, The Journey Toward Holiness is the name of the book. But in this, I'm going to get you a couple quotes, and here's one of them. He says, humility is the place of entire dependence on God, the first duty and the highest virtue of the creature, and the root of every virtue. And so pride, or the loss of this humility, is the root of every sin and every evil. James, who is quoting a couple Old Testament passages, says it like this. In James 4:6, he says, God opposes the proud, but gives grace to the humble. Now listen to this. This message I have for you this morning, pay attention to what James just said and wrestle with what Andrew Murray said. Andrew Murray said that humility is the great soil of which springs every other good character trait, and pride is the soil from which all sin proceeds. And then listen to what James, under the inspiration of the Spirit, quoting the Old Testament, tells us. That if I am walking in pride, God is opposed to me. God has taken a posture of standing against me. But when I am humble, I am now in a place where I am prepared to be the recipient of his grace, which is the giving of all of his good gifts. We live in a culture that tells you the pathway to greatness is your pride. Make much of you. And in the midst of that, the Bible is saying that is a way. You can be great on planet Earth with that. And as you are making something of yourself, you are in the crosshairs of the God of the universe. And he will not, in the end, let that win. There's a reason for that. We'll get to that in a minute. But that's what happens in this story. So what happens with Esther. And so just a recap real quick here. If you've been with us, this is just kind of following up. But those who are new to us, kind of just reminding, we're in this story of Esther. It's this amazing story where the central theme is God's providence, his unseen hand orchestrating the events of the whole story, reminding us that the God of the universe, that there are times in our lives where we cannot see his presence. We cannot feel his presence. It's hard to find him, the invisible God, but he is always this eternal God that we prayed to a few minutes ago, is always from the outside of history, the outside of time, orchestrating the events of time and of our lives for his glory and our good, if we trust in him. But the whole thing's about providence, which means we're going to see this in the story, that humility or pride determines if that beautiful work of the hand of God is working for us or is standing opposed to us. And so we had better figure out what pride is and what humility is, because more than likely when you're asked, think of somebody who's proud, you do not begin with me. But if I understand the scriptures correctly and I wrestle with them honestly, that ought to be the first answer that comes to mind. And so here I am, Mike, preaching a sermon about something I'm awful at. Right? Sometimes the scriptures force us, like as pastors, not sometimes, it's all the time, but there are places where I have to stand up and say, this is what the scripture says. Don't look at me as the example, look at Jesus. Right? The best I can tell you is that I'm a proud man. who is trying by the grace of God to find humility. And oh, by the way, God makes that way possible. I will tell you, you should pray for humility, but then watch out, because God does not give you humility by just all of a sudden making you soft and quiet and humble. He makes you, gives you humility by humiliating you sometimes. Right? But in this moment, what's going on is that the story is of Haman and Esther and Mordecai, and so you have this beautiful girl who, by no event of her own, goes from being a peasant to the queen of the most powerful empire. She is a Jewish girl who got swept up in a moment, and the king ends up, you know, through something that looks like The Bachelor, which that's all over the news, right? The Eureka guys are Bachelor now, but something like The Bachelor, we end up with Esther becoming the queen, and now she's in this mighty position. Meanwhile, Mordecai, her cousin, chooses not to bow to this evil dude named Haman, who is now second in command in the kingdom, and that just ticks Haman off. But rather than taking out Mordecai, he hates the Jews as well and comes up with this crazy plot, rolls dice, and the dice just happen to come up with giving 12 months before carrying out of a law that the king agrees to, which is a genocidal, murderous attack against every Jewish person alive. We find out as we wrestle with this story in light of the whole story of the Bible that is now standing in two proud men standing in opposition to the promises of God and his purpose and his covenant. And so when we read it, we should know this is not going to end well. But in the midst of this, there's this girl who is in this high place, and when she finds out about the murderous plot, she has to wrestle with the decision. If I go in and see the king unannounced, he will take my life. There was a law in Persia that said when the king's on his throne doing his thing, he is ruling, you can't go in front of him unless he asks you. And if you walk into the room and say, "King, I need to talk to you," and he does not raise his golden scepter, he had two cats behind him who were holding big old axes who would just drag you and chop your head off, and that was the end. And so nobody walked in unannounced. But here she is in this moment where she realizes that she can either live in prosperity, can be the queen, can be the Persian princess, or she can stand up with her people and risk her own life greatly and step in and use the position she had for the glory of God and for his purposes. And her uncle or her cousin Mordecai looks at her and says, "God is going to send deliverance for our people somewhere. But maybe you were here for such a time as this. Maybe this is the whole point, is that God has placed you in this place for this moment." And we ended last week with Esther standing up saying, "I know what I have to do. Let's pray 3 days of prayer and fasting. And what's going to happen is after the third day, I'm going in. And if I die, I die." And so now she is about to enter, and that's what our story this week deals with, that she is going to walk in and she becomes the beautiful picture of humility, the beautiful picture of God's using her, but her giving her life away for the glory of God, the cause of others. Meanwhile, we see Haman and who he is. And so what I want to talk to you about this from this text and from this story is just wrestle with three big truths about humility and pride. And what I hope will happen is this morning you will literally begin to wrestle with the fact that you too are proud, that there is something in you that is always fighting to put self back at the center of your being and to make much of you, and that is not why you were created, therefore that's the problem. But start wrestling with that in the gospel and start just working to root that out. And you will never get there. But oh, God opposes the proud, but he gives grace when we find humility. So we're going to figure out what that means and what that says. So the first thing we want to deal with is the picture of humility. Winston Churchill was talking about his political opponent, a guy named Clement Attlee, and he said this: "He is a humble man, but then again, he has much to be humble about." Anybody want that said about you? He's humble. He has a lot to be humble about. Nobody in here wants to go, "You know, when you think of me, what do you think of?" "I think you were very humble." Because what we hear is, that means you're a wuss and you're weak and you got nothing going for you, right? But being humble is what the scriptures push us to and say, this is what we ought to be known for. And like I said, we all wrestled in with, how do we say this? Wrestling with our own hypocrisy in the midst of this. And here we are in this moment with Esther, where what she could have done is she could have looked at her own people and said, I know that this is bad. I'll pray about this, but you don't get it. For the first time in my life, I'm known. For the first time in my life, I'm famous. For the first time in my life, people bow to me. My clothes, I wear a different outfit every day, and it's awesome. They're gold-covered things. And the king, you know, he's got a whole bunch of other women. I have to live with that, but that's all right. I have the best meals, and I don't sleep on just a hard wooden thing in a dump. I'm in the palace. She could have stood up and said, this is my moment to shine, my moment to make much of myself. And in our world, who would falter for that, right? But she was there for such a time as this, and she becomes the beautiful picture of somebody who gives away this position, gives away her own life, and in humility follows the will of God and approaches even the moment in great humility. It's a very bizarre and interesting story if you wrestle with it, right? Because what she does is she goes now to the king and walks in the room. Verse 2 tells us that the king raises his scepter. She found favor with the king, raises his scepter. She goes then before him. He says, I'll give you anything up to half my kingdom. And she does not, she says, here's what I want, king. I want to throw a banquet for you and Haman. Which is kind of weird. Like I think I'd have walked in and said, let me tell you what I want, king. I've got this all worked out in my brain. I've been working on it for a while. I've got a script. What I want is that no good cuss to go down and you to backtrack on your law. I want you to notice all through the story, the outcome of the story is not Esther and Mordecai's plan. There is no place where they say you need to go in and get revenge. What they do say is you need to go in and stand with and for your people. And so she says, I want you to invite Haman to a banquet. Now, we can read that and say, oh, the plot is going. I don't think so. And so what that does is it brings us face to face with the fact that her approach, while bizarre, is saying, I'm going to serve the king and I'm going to serve my enemy. Hoping that that moment will give a chance to beg for the life of our people. That's kind of what's going on. Do you see the beautiful emptying of self? You know, and you know, she doesn't have some guy in the corner who's going to take Haman out. Like, she prepares a meal. And then you have this moment, it's really weird, where the king goes, all right, up to half my kingdom, what is it? Because the king knows that if she approached him without being asked, she's not just coming to say, hey, lunch is ready, right? Made you a potluck. I've been working all afternoon, and I got a roast in the oven, so come on, sweetie. Like, she says it's been 30 days since he has called her before him, and for her to approach him, something's got to be going on. And he's curious, but here comes Haman, who comes in his story. Now she's serving them, and the king in front of Haman tells her again, hey, what is it that you want? I know there's something behind this. And she goes, my request is, I want to throw another party for the two of you tomorrow. Like it reminds me of Martin Luther. If you're familiar with the story of Martin Luther, he was brought before this place called the Diet of Worms. Okay, which is spelled like worms, and I always liked that. But it was this place where he was actually being put on trial for his life for the things that he was preaching against the Catholic Church. And he thought he was going to show up and have this opportunity to have a discussion with these leaders. But what happened is this one guy stood up and said, you have one thing to do today, and that is to recant from everything you've written. Recant. Walk it back. Say you deny it. And then we will put you in a right relationship. We will not hunt you down and kill you. We will let you go. You must recant. And now he realizes that the situation is not what he thought he was walking into. He thought he was walking into a situation where he was going to be able to have a discussion about the ideas. He had written tons of books, tons of material. They're telling him he must recant of it all and tell people they must burn his books and he will no longer speak to this. And now he's standing there in this moment to realize that if I say no, I can't recant, his life is in peril. But if he stands up and says, I do recant, there's no middle ground he's given if I do recant. And here's what Martin Luther said. Can I have a night to think about it? Like in this moment, you want Luther to stand up and in boldness go, no, I will not recant. But he goes, I'm a little freaked out. Like that's just real, right? You read the story here and Esther just goes, come back tomorrow. We'll talk about it again. And I don't know if she's trying to muster courage. I don't know if she has something else in mind. The story doesn't tell us, but what we do have is this woman who humbly relinquishes herself to the will of God, humbly gives herself to the king, humbly submits to his authority, and humbly serves both he and this enemy who has threatened the death of her cousin and all of his people. She just gives it. She is a picture here of what, when God says he gives grace to the humble, what it looks like. And so what we have here is this beautiful moment where this is what's going on. She is just responding not by saying, I'm going to make much of me, but I am going to live in the center of what God has for me and trust in him. And it's going to show up in the way I treat other people. And so Andrew Murray says this in his book, the highest glory of the creature is in being only a vessel. To receive and enjoy and show forth the glory of God, it can do this only as it is willing to be nothing in itself, that God may be all. Water always fills first the lowest places. The lower, the emptier a man lies before God, the speedier and fuller will be the inflow of the diving glory. The emptier man lies before God, the speedier and fuller will be the inflow of the diving glory. In other words, he's saying, listen, the way to experience the greatest glory is by finding the beauty of humility. Now, clarity here. Humility is not that you are a pushover, that you do not have convictions. Humility is not standing up and saying, I just don't believe anything and I don't stand for anything. That's not humility. In fact, another guy I read this week said, we tend to be humble about the wrong things. We tend to be humble about truth and proud about us. And what we need to do is be proud or stand in the truth with conviction and be humble about our own selves and who we are. It's not weakness or softness. It is trusting in the perfect plan of God and giving myself wholly to another. Humility is me doing all I can to empty self of self and to be filled with somebody greater. That's humility. And so God opposes the proud, gives grace to the humble. This is what happens here in this story. So we need to also see the peril of pride. The peril of pride. What happens in the story is now we see Esther and her response. How does Haman respond? And it's insane. It's crazy when he does this. What we see is that Haman is a man who's filled with pride. And while the story today won't get you to the conclusion, so if you don't know what's going on, you're going to have to come back and hear the end, it does not go well. But boy, right now it seems to be. It seems like the proud people get the highest positions and get the most honor and accolades. And so we're told that Haman went out that day joyful and glad of heart. Why is he glad of heart? We're told later, he is glad of heart because I got invited to a banquet where it was just me and the king, and his wife threw a party for me. She thinks I'm hot. She digs me. She knows I'm important. And so she doesn't just cook for her husband. She cooks for Haman. I am somebody. Joyful of heart. But he walks out and he sees Mordecai. And here's Mordecai who says, when Haman walks by, everybody's supposed to bow and submit to him and treat him like he's a god. And Mordecai's like, nope. And it tells us he wouldn't bow, nor did he tremble. In other words, Mordecai's not even afraid of Haman. He just no fear. And that incenses Mordecai, incenses Haman. He just is now furious and gets fixated on this. Now, thinking about this, one of the things that happens when we live in pride is always going to have to look at people who destroy my sense of well-being and my sense of I am somebody, and now you have to, pride creates enemies. And in fact, I will tell you that if you are lining enemies up on social media, if you're lining enemies up the way you see your lunch table at school or the way you interact with people at work, all that sort of stuff, and you are saying to win, they must lose. Let me tell you, you're being at that point like Haman. right? And so he's got like his sense of self-worth and self-value is so high that he feels like now it's not good enough just to kill all these people. I got to get Mordecai quicker. I got to make a fool of him and make the world know that I am so important. And so it goes on. He gets home. He restrains himself, gets home, and he meets with his wife and friends. And look at verse 11. Haman recounted to the splendor of all his riches, the number of his sons, all the promotions with which the king had honored him, and how he had advanced him above all the other officials of the servants of the king. In other words, he's hanging out with his family, his wife, and his buddies are there, and he goes, man, it's amazing. I am so awesome. Right? I mean, come on. I got tons of kids. And like, they all think I'm the best dad ever, just so you know. And man, I got me a big old house. And I can look down the hill at my neighbors and go, my house is bigger than yours. I feel pretty good about that. My bank account doing okay. I am somebody. I got it working out for me. And by the way, the king, just like I am his right-hand man, he keeps promoting me. One of these days, we're going to get rid of that guy and I'm going to run this place. Because I am somebody. Like, do you just feel that? Now, here's what happens. We read something like this, and again, our thoughts go to people who respond like this. But something is going on in Haman's heart that is going on in every one of our hearts all the time. It's just that the pursuit of this in his heart has worked. He has gotten to a place where he can look at himself and say, I am great, but it's still not enough. Do you see that? Because the next line is, even all that is not enough until Mordecai bows to me. I'm just telling you that a prideful approach to life, you will always end in places. It will never be enough. There is always going to be somebody with more followers. There's always going to be somebody with more likes. There's always going to be somebody with more popularity. There's always going to be somebody with more money. There's always going to be somebody with a bigger yard and a bigger house. There's always going to be somebody with more power. There's always going to be somebody who is liked. I mean, pride never lands where you go, I'm content and happy. Pride is always going to push you to a place where I need more than this. And therefore, people who have more or who are keeping me from experiencing all this become a problem to you, a problem to be solved, overcome, mistreated, used. And this is the posture of our human heart and sinfulness. This is where we end up going all the time. He ends up going to his family and his friends and say, what should I do about this? And the answer tells you he has not gathered people around. Like, this is what pride will do. Pride will get people around you who you will look at, that you will be able to look at them and go, I am so awesome. And they will all go, oh, we agree. What Haman needs at some point, at this point in time, is a friend who looks at him and goes, you're nuts. What the heck's wrong with you? But pride will, it's humility that brings people like that into our lives. Pride will never allow people actual entrance into our lives who will look at us and go, man, you're off your rocker. And so they say, what you gotta do is build this giant scaffold. You know, it's actually 50 cubits, 75 feet high, and hang that turkey. Now, why 75 feet high? Why 50 cubits? So that this, when you get this guy for not giving you your props, not giving you what's due you, when you get this guy, everybody in the world or everybody in the city of Susa will see it and they will know how awesome you are. And then I love it. It says, and then you hang him tomorrow, like kill him in this gruesome way, and then you could go joyfully to the queen's party. Now we know the setup. We know kind of what's going on. That's not going to, it's going to end badly if that's what takes place. But Haman doesn't know this. And he's like, that's a plan, man. I'm for that. But see what happens, you're like, well, I would never do that. The posture of our sinful heart is always in this direction. I have my, and I made a little mistake. I should have made this colored, but if you can't see that, that is a glass that is what? Full of water, right? It is full. Now, I'm going to take it here, and I'm going to pour this into here. And now I have a glass that is, a whole bunch of people said empty. Is it empty? It has been replaced with something else. That is not an empty glass. This is not a vacuum. If it was a true vacuum, that glass would implode on itself and blow up. It's not empty. It is full of something else. It is full of air, which what happens is I don't have to pour air into it. Air automatically goes where something weightier doesn't exist. It just automatically fills this glass when the water leaves, right? It fills this glass when it is empty of the water. But the reason before this, it was filled with water, which means there was no air. And the reason there was no air in it is because something weightier was in the glass, right? But what happens is that the minute the weightier thing leaves, air fills it. This is the way pride is in your life and in mine. Catch this. This is the way pride is. That I don't have to try to be proud. I don't have to try to bend in on myself and think I'm the center. I don't have to try to make much of me. What happens is in my life, I'm always fighting for that in some way. And it shows up in all areas of our lives. And what happens is anywhere the weightier leaves, this noxious, toxic gas fills in its place just naturally. What happens is I read, God opposes the proud but gives grace to the humble. And here's what we say. Okay, I got to work on humility this week. I got to be more humble. But what will happen is at the end of the week, you will have a good week of humility and you will stand in front of your children and go, I'm doing pretty good on this. I'm really humble, man. I'm rocking the world. You see this? This is the number one danger of religion, okay? It is the number one danger if you come into church, read your Bible, praying, seeking the Lord, because what happens is you seek the Lord wanting to know Him, but before long, we are looking around, comparing ourselves to other people, and all of a sudden the weighty is disappearing, and it is being filled with something different. It is, man, I'm awesome at this Christianity thing. I've had my walk with the Lord all week. I've read my Bible every day. How about you? Not doing so well? Hey, let me give you some tips on how to really walk with Jesus. Right? That there is a sense of, in our religious life, it just shows up. And as I've been reading, I'm like all the time, I'm riding in my car singing this song in my car about the greatness of God. But I sing harmony and I feel like in my car when nobody else can hear me, it sounds good, right? I'm like, got this bass line going. Listen to that voice. And I literally heard the Spirit of the Lord say, yeah, anywhere the weightiness of the glory of God is not, the noxic gas of your own pride is going to seep in there. And I went, oh gosh, I'm awful. But the solution is not. It's not to try to be humble. God gives grace to the humble, but if I try to be humble, I will become proud in my humility. The solution is to replace the noxious gas with something that is weightier, that will push it out. What is that? We talk here a lot about glorifying God, living for the glory of God. The basic meaning of the word glory in the Bible means weightiness. It means when the solution to my pride is not to try not to be proud. The solution to my pride is to lift my chin and see the glory and the weightiness and the wonder of the God who is the God of providence. Haman knew nothing of this. And so what he did is if he had a spirituality, it was a spirituality of being his own God and being cool with his own greatness. But we see this and go, you know, I need to trust in the Lord and hold on to Him. What does that look like? It means continually pursuing the weightiness and the glory of God in my life. Which means I want to close quickly with the pathway to that. How do we pull this off? Because it says God opposes the proud but gives grace to the humble. Look again at verse 2. Just let your chin drop down and look at verse 2. It tells us that the king raised his scepter and that she found, do you see the word there? Favor. Favor in the sight of the king. That word favor is the Hebrew word that we get our word grace from. It's grace. It is winning unmerited favor. But as you read this, especially as people give favor in these stories, you know that that is God's providence in the story, that he takes the heart of somebody and he turns their even evil heart to look on his people with favor. We're told in the story of the Exodus that God tells his people in advance, you know what's going to happen? The Egyptians are going to look on you with favor, and when you leave Egypt, they're going to give you a whole bunch of stuff. Now, is anything going, hey, we had 10 plagues, our kid died, our response is we're going to give you our stuff. That's not the way people are wired, but that's what God says is going to happen. It's what happens. Favor, grace, that God gives grace to the humble. She steps before him and receives the grace of God, which shows up in the grace of the king. This is the way the Lord works, that where his glory, his weightiness fills, what comes with it are the blessings of his goodness. So how do I get there? Well, let me encourage you that every single day you should acknowledge three things about yourself. Three things that helps you be in the place of humility, to be a recipient of grace and to see the glory of God. Three things about yourself that I would encourage you to confess and hold on to in a world that tells you that the way you make something of yourself is by going for greatness. In the midst of this, the first thing I will tell you that you should confess about yourself is that you are a creature. You're a creature, which means that you also have a creator, right? That your existence is not because of you, that you didn't do anything to cause yourself to exist, that you were created by a God who loves you. You live in a world where the Creator gave everything. Embrace the smallness of that and be joyful about that. That you were just a creature. But on top of that, if the more I get it, the more I understand creature, creator, the more I can pause and be thankful rather than proud. Like I'd look at the fall weather and enjoy the beauty of a day, and rather than feeling amazed at me, I am thankful for the good gifts. That if I acknowledge that I'm a creature and live and embrace my creatureliness, that's a good thing. The second thing is that I acknowledge that I'm a sinner. That I am, in my heart of hearts, prone to wander. Lord, I need it. Prone to leave the God I love. That the solution, therefore, to that issue was a cross. That the reason the cross story is needed is because my sin, the wickedness of my heart, the brokenness that comes from every drip of pride that becomes the seedbed for all the sin in my life, required the bloody death of Jesus Christ. And nobody can stand next to the cross and be proud. How can anyone be arrogant when he stands beside the cross? That I am a creature, I am a sinner, and third, I am a saint. If you're a follower of Jesus in here this morning, you are a saint, meaning that God has saved you and it had nothing to do with you. You are a recipient of his grace, which means he gave you everything you didn't deserve, and he gave you mercy, which you did deserve, his justice. And I can't stand before God. The minute I stand before God and go, hey, I'm right before you because of something I did, I am stepping into pride, and I'm no longer a recipient of grace. My salvation is wholly the cross of Jesus and the grace of God, right? And so as the band comes up here, like, let's just start driving that deep of being okay that I don't, like, God has graced me by giving me a very small Twitter account. I don't have many followers. And I have moments where I wish I could be important and I'd have more. Like, I tweeted something. It was awesome. Why don't more people like it? And I know Scott and Leslie Holdegrave are always going to come through for me and at least upload my feelings a little bit because they're going to like my stuff. Now they're not, and I'm going to feel worse this week. But, you know, that becomes, like, part of this whole story in our lives, right? And this week I had to, like, honestly thank God that he had not put me in a position where I could be proud of my social media presence. Because I want that. But the truth of the matter is that is just that glory of God being pulled out of my life, and instantly the air, the noxious gas of my own pride just sinks in and takes its place. And so just constantly remind me, I'm a creature, there is a creator. I'm nothing, he's everything. I am a sinner, which means my filth is so bad it took the cross to save me. And I am a saint. By nothing I did, I have been rescued and redeemed. And living there, and you will find the beauty of humility. Go find the book. Go find the book. It's free. We do our family worship sheet every week. And so this week, I post it on Koinonia, our online place, and also on the blog tomorrow morning. The link to that book is there. But you can just go to christianaudio.com and then find their free resource and find that. Get it downloaded and spend this week listening to this great saint reminding us of the beauty of humility. Lord, we thank you for being sufficient and weighty and glorious. And we pray this morning that as we stand in that glory, we will just experience you and all the beautiful gifts of grace. Everything in my heart wants to cry out, Lord, make much of me. And in the midst of it, there is your Spirit saying that my life will be full and meaningful when I make much of Jesus. So help us this week to figure that out and to walk in humility towards you, towards each other, towards our enemies, towards our situations. And Lord, help us just be mindful. Remind us, like, just work repentance in us this week as we think about what we heard, reminding those of us who follow Jesus that the posture of our heart is this way, but help us be mindful and see that so we can start walking closer to you in it. In your name I pray. Amen.